Pumpkin spice may be all over the place right now, but one of the best flavors of fall in Iowa is a crisp, sweet, locally grown apple. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. We are in the thick of apple season right now. We'll talk about growing your own apples, how to harvest and how to store this delicious fruit. And it's also been a banner year for painted lady butterflies. They're everywhere. We'll talk about them and answer your questions about plants, insects, or trees. It's also our fall membership drive, so please make your contribution to support the public radio service you depend on at iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Many people in Iowa have had a colorful surprise with flocks of painted lady butterflies showing up in their gardens. We'll talk about why we're seeing so many of these beautiful insects, but we're going to start the hour with one of the best parts of fall, apple season. Aaron Stile is Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, and he's here today to talk apples. Hello, Aaron.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, it's great to talk with everybody.
And you want to make it clear that you feel that apples are the original flavor of fall?
Yeah, they are. You know, so apples are available in grocery stores pretty much year-round now, especially because there are so many sources from the Southern Hemisphere, and we've gotten really good at storing apples long-term. So they've kind of not become as ubiquitous alone with fall, but they really are kind of the original fall flavor.
Does this mean that you're a pumpkin spice hater?
No. I enjoy pumpkin spice too. Maybe not as much as everybody else on Facebook, but I do really enjoy apples in this time of year. So,
well, and even though we're good at storing apples, I feel like apples eaten fresh in season taste so much better.
They really do, especially when they're from, an orchard just down the road or something like that.
Now, there are so many kinds of apples. I mean, give us a little bit of background on where they come from and why there are so many varieties.
Well, there are over 7,000 named cultivars of apples out there. Many of them we're not very familiar with. And there's probably two dozen or so that most folks would recognize as an apple because they're regularly available from orchards or in stores. But apples have a tremendous amount of diversity when you grow them from seed. And so there's a lot of potential for selecting seed sources and selecting plants that have really great tasting or colored or all the above fruit, because there's so much variety that comes when you grow them from seed. And so I think from that comes a lot of potential, and we see that in the number of cultivars that are out there.
And so it's an easy kind of crop to manipulate the flavors?
Yes, if you know what you're doing, I suppose, and you are controlling crosses. It's also an easy, the apple seed grows pretty easily from seed, and it's a fun project, but if you plant the seeds of a golden delicious apple, what you'll get will probably be nothing like a golden delicious apple, and that's what's kind of fun about it, and it's also the reason why growing apples from seed with the intent of using them to eat is usually not very successful.
Well, and I know we hear from a lot of people on this show who say, hey, there's this apple tree and it's growing in my yard, mm-hmm. and I want to know what kind of apple it is. in some cases, not only is it really, really difficult to figure that out, but often it may not even be a recognized cultivar.
Or it's what's more likely is that 50 years ago, it was a recognized cultivar that has fallen out of favor and fallen out of commercial production. And, that long ago, there are not very many people around who even know what that apple tasted like or looked like. And so there are a lot of cultivars, I think, over time that have been lost. And there are several organizations, and Seed Savers is one of them, that is working to help preserve some of these heritage varieties for this very reason. It's probably no surprise, consumers are fickle, and the newest apple is always the best one, and it comes at the expense of losing some older varieties accidentally.
So let's talk about growing apples. A lot of people like to have apple trees on their property, and it's challenging to grow apples.
They are a little bit challenging. A couple of reasons. One, you need at least two different varieties of apples to get good fruit set. Most of them need a different type of apple, and it could be a crab apple, but it needs to be some other type of apple to get good pollination and good fruit set. So you have to have more than one tree. That's one of the issues. And there are several very significant disease issues with apples. And to get a good apple crop, you have to manage these diseases preventatively. And often that requires a spray schedule of some sort from the time that buds start to swell all the way up through fruit set and well into the season. So it is if you want really nice apples, it is a big venture.
All right. And if you really don't want to put chemicals on your apples, you just have to have a lot more tolerance for flaws in your apples.
Yeah. So many of the diseases can be just more cosmetic, things like fly speck or russeting. Like, these are things that happen to apples. And for the most part, they don't impact the flavor of the apple. You can also do a good job of selecting good cultivars. So things like Granny Smith or Honeycrisp are really great apples, but they're really susceptible to certain diseases like powdery mildew and apple scab and some other things. But if you do a good job and pick varieties like Liberty or Freedom that have good fruit but also have really well-documented resistance or in some cases immunity to these really common diseases, it means that you won't have to spray as much to get a nice apple.
So let's say you grow apples. They turn out pretty good and you want to harvest your apples. Do you have any tips for us?
I think the easiest way to do this is just taste them. You can't always say my apple tree will be ripe the second week of September because the environmental conditions that year play a huge role in when they finally ripen up. But about that time, you can start plucking fruit off the tree and giving it a little taste. And if it's sweet and crisp, not mushy or not too tart or starchy, then it's ready to go and you can harvest them. And if it's kind of mushy, then you waited too long. And if it's still way too tart or too firm, then you're not there yet. And relying on color is a little difficult because there are a lot of varieties that color up before they're ripe. So color alone isn't always a great indication, but taste always is.
All right. And I think that many of us have heard that one bad apple can ruin the whole bunch.
Yeah.
Or the whole barrel. I don't know.
Yeah.
So when you harvest apples, it is important to make sure that you are not causing one bad apple to rot all of your other apples.
Right.
How do you store them?
Storing them is, first, it's good to grade them, so to cull out anything that has big bruises, big cuts, big flaws, and either use them first or toss them. And then the good apples, you'll want to make sure you store as cool as possible, ideally 32 degrees Fahrenheit. They don't freeze at that temperature. They freeze a little bit lower than that temperature.
That's super convenient for most of us.
But getting them in a cool spot is really important. And getting them in a humid spot is really important. And you can do the humidity thing by putting them in perforated plastic bags. That will help trap humidity in. A refrigerator is a good step forward because your average refrigerator is around 45 degrees. That's well on your way, much better than, say, 50 or 60 degrees. And for every 10 degrees you go down, you can extend the shelf life quite a bit. And so the colder you can get it, the better.
All right. But you want to make sure that you're not just sticking them in a refrigerator that's going to dehydrate them.
Right. And that's where putting them like in a plastic perforated bag works really well. It helps hold some moisture in, but doesn't keep all of the moisture in where you'll get too much buildup and then rot because of all the liquid.
All right. Now, we have just a couple minutes left. Are there particular cultivars that you think are great for home gardens?
I personally really lean towards the apple trees that don't require a lot of spraying because they're more resistant to diseases. And I mentioned a couple of these. Liberty and Freedom are two apples that have good documented resistance to these diseases. They are good eating apples, good using apples. Of course, we all have our favorite apples.
Yes.
It might be Honeycrisp. Mine is Granny Smith. Richard, you really like a good Golden Delicious, right?
Right. And Chieftain. Chieftain's good, too.
Yeah, I like Chieftain, too. But some of these
Jonathan
apples—
Jonathan is my favorite.
Yeah,
very
Jonathan's
tart.
A
love
good
that.
One. Yep. And so if I were growing them in my own yard, the trees I pick are ones that are naturally resistant to this stuff because I want to have as little spraying and as little management as possible. And I'm not so picky enough that I won't accept a slightly different cultivar. Maybe that's maybe not quite as sweet or quite as red or something like that.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We do have really, truly a hort gang assembled in the studio today. Richard Duran is here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And, of course, Aaron Style is here, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens. You just heard Dennis Reese talking about his favorite tree man, Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester. Hello, Mark.
I'm really honored to be here.
Yeah, we're honored to have you. I think there's probably a lot of other tree men and women who are feeling hurt across the state of Iowa right now, but, you know, you're
a good one. I'm just one small person of many.
And also joining us today is Nathan Brockman, entomologist and curator of the Christina Ryman Butterfly Wing at Ryman Gardens. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, and thanks for having me today.
Well, thank you so much for coming over today. And let's talk a little bit about painted lady butterflies. They are all over the place. My Facebook feed blew up yesterday with people posting pictures and videos. They really are everywhere right now.
Yeah, I'm fielding all sorts of questions lately about this orange butterfly I'm seeing, but they seem smaller than the monarchs. So what is going on?
Right. People probably get very excited and think, oh, these are monarchs.
But yeah, and we're still a little bit out from the monarchs. So it's fun to have this burst of excitement before then. But yeah, the painted ladies are having a wonderful year. They had a really good spring. They migrated out. So the painted ladies are related to the Red Admiral, the American Lady, that we see all of those in the state, and they all migrate just like monarchs do. So where the monarchs have to leave because they can't handle our Iowa winters, they also migrate. And so in the spring, they had a really good spring. A lot of them got here. And then we actually had a good year for butterflies temperature-wise and water-wise as far as rain, and their numbers built up because they'll have multiple generations. And each generation, their numbers build and build, and we've kind of got to that maximum point now where you go outside and they're everywhere.
Well, and they're just wonderful to see. What kind of habitat do they depend on? We talk a lot about milkweed because we know that the monarchs need that. What's good for the painted ladies?
So I like to joke that the painted lady is like the goat of the butterfly world, where the monarch is specific to milkweed, and there's lots of different milkweed species. The painted lady's host plant list is over 100 species long. It's really long. They'll eat a lot of different things from a lot of different families even. And as far as habitats they tend to like disturbed areas and open areas. So urban areas do very well for them.
So why don't we see this many painted ladies every fall?
So a lot of factors play in. And again, they had a good migration. So a lot of them got up here and started mating and laying their eggs, and their numbers have built over time. They found lots of food. Parasites or parasitoids may have been low this year. So that helps them as well, not being eaten as caterpillars, as food for a parasitoid or for a predator of some kind. And it just keeps building. And typically in the fall, we see more of them before they migrate down. But this year is just particularly a high year.
All right. And where do they migrate to?
So they'll migrate south. They don't fly low and flap the whole time. They get themselves way up into the jet stream, and they use those air currents up there to push them. So the bulk of them will end up in southwest U.S., kind of in the Texas area, into northern Mexico. But some of them will be blown all over the place, and they'll be found all over the southern United States.
And when are they going to leave?
Well, they'll be getting out of here shortly, the bulk of them, but we'll have other individuals that'll continue to emerge later into the season that are timed a little differently, and so we should see them up until the first frost. You'll be able to see some, but this massive number that we're seeing right now for another week or maybe a week, and then they'll all start migrating out, and they'll just start disappearing, and we'll see less and less of them. But there'll still be some all the way to the first frost, because every year, not all of them make it out of the state.
Well, and I know that there are some people listening right now who are saying, hey, I'm not seeing giant flocks of painted lady butterflies. So, and then there are others who are saying, yeah, they're all over my yard. Where are they? How, if you want to go see a bunch of painted lady butterflies, where would you find them?
Outside. like literally, if you have something flowering outside, something, some sort of late fall plant or an annual that won't stop flowering until it frosts, there are going to be butterflies. There are so many out there now. And that's what kind of adds to the fun of it, is they're clustered together, because a lot of your garden plants have stopped flowering, and they did weeks ago. And so anything that's still flowering at this point in time, that's what they're swarming to.
All right. So you look for something that's flowering and go get close, because they flutter really close. You may not see them until you get up close.
Well, and since they're nectaring so hard, they're not flying around a lot. They're really probing every single flower to find every bit of nectar. Because a lot of butterflies, when they're visiting flowers, the nectar's already gone. So they have to keep hunting for more nectar, because that's what they're after, that nectar reward.
Now, we also see some of these painted lady butterflies. Well, they look a little battered, a little old. So some of them aren't going to make the migration, right?
Yeah. And so unlike the monarchs, where there's this whole trip down, a winter diapause, and a trip part of the way back up for this late generation, painted ladies will have multiple generations even through the winter months. So some of those late ones, they may fly down quite a ways to the southern U.S. and stop and maybe mate. But a lot of those, yes, they will be the ones who won't make it. Their timing was a little off of when they came out. And they may be eaten by other animals. And, you know, that adds to the food web, which, you know, our other animals and other insects need food as well. And these will add to it this time of year.
All right. Now, some people have reported already seeing little clumps of monarchs. Are they misidentifying them and thinking that painted ladies are monarchs, or are we already starting to see some of the monarchs get ready for their migration?
In Iowa, I don't think we're seeing the migration just yet. They say they've started up north and they're working their way down. So, you know, we could be 10 to 14 days before the big masses come through. And then the monarchs will keep trickling through even after that, as long as the weather holds. And that's what's really fun about this time of year with insects and butterflies in particular, is their numbers tend to build up until that first frost. And sometimes some unusual species will have these big masses because we'll have a late fall. And that can really be a lot of fun to go outside and really observe.
All right. Nathan Brockman, entomologist, also the curator of the Christina Ryman Butterfly Wing at Ryman Gardens. He's going to stick around and answer a few questions, right, Nathan?
Sure.
All right. And also, of course, with me, Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens. They are all here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100 and also Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from Dennis in Solon. He says, I have a wonderful pear tree, but the last few years, the fruit is damaged by some unseen insect that punctures the skin and burrows to the seeds, causing scarring or rotting due to the injuries. Any suggestions?
Well, you could try using a home orchard spray and apply that according to label directions. You may also want to send a sample maybe to the Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic so they can possibly identify the actual pest. Okay. Knowing what it is would help.
All right. And so they could probably identify that from looking at the fruit?
Hopefully. It's not a guarantee, but hopefully they can.
All right. It's just more forensics detective work.
Yes.
There. All right. Here's a question from Sonia in Collins. What are your tips for actually harvesting apples? Pull and twist? How do you get the apples on top?
Well, you need if you do have a large tree, you're going to need a ladder. I do recommend harvesting from the tree and not the ground, because every one of them that hits the ground has a bruise on it, typically. And the important thing is when you take them off of the tree is to not to rip off that entire spur that it's attached to. It causes a big opening wound. And so a lot of times I do have a little bit of a twist to it, but I'm doing it gently so that it don't so I don't ruin that spur and that branch that it's attached to. I don't know. How do you do it, Richard?
Just a little twist. Yeah. If they're mature, they come off fairly easily.
Yeah.
So it's not that hard.
And you will need a ladder for big trees.
Yes.
That's the unfortunate part.
All right. It's hard. I mean, it's hard work if you're picking a lot of apples.
It can be, yeah, unless you get a really nice dwarf tree. And that's why dwarf rootstock is so wonderful, because the smaller you can keep that tree, it often doesn't reduce fruit set as much as you might think, but it really improves the ability to manage and pick that tree.
All right, let's go to the phones. Sue is on the line in Pleasant Hill. Hi, Sue.
Hi, thanks so much.
Yeah, what's your question?
I have two questions. I realized walking the yard earlier this week how dry everything was. So I got the hoses back out, and of course the butterfly garden is covered with painted ladies. And I watered everything. If I keep the plants hydrated, does that help with the production of nectar?
I would assume to some extent, because plants are under stress right now, and because of that stress, the flowers may not last as long. And
yeah.
So if they're well hydrated, well watered, I would assume they would bloom a little bit longer.
Thank you. My other question is, when we always have a discussion about hummingbirds, when should I stop feeding them so they'll move on?
Well, we don't have a wildlife expert here today, but I know that it's coming up soon in the next couple of weeks, because they do need to head south. Although Nathan,
they're just like insects will do. They're going to take multiple cues from their environment, and an available food source is going to be one they'll use. But they're using light levels and temperatures and day length and all these other things. So they'll know when to go. You could leave that out, and if they'll use it, they'll use it. Otherwise, you know, they'll leave.
All right,
they'll be ready.
You're
to
not going to trick them into staying longer.
No.
That's good. All right, Sue, thanks a lot for your call. Do you ever see butterflies feeding at hummingbird feeders?
So it does happen. You see a lot more of the bees and the wasp and the ants go to hummingbird feeders. It's really rare for a butterfly to go to hummingbird feeder. Although we did at Ryman Gardens, we designed a vertical butterfly feeder, and the butterflies do use it in the butterfly wing.
All right. So would you, if somebody really wants butterflies, would you recommend they try to do something like that?
You have to be careful with those outdoor feeders. You're providing extra sugars. At the same time, it's going to get used a lot more by bees, wasps, ants, flies, beetles than it will ever get used by butterflies. So if you want to feed those other insects, great, because that's who you're going to feed.
All right. So we've had this beautiful weather lately, Mark, and you're going to come back and talk about fall color next month. But whenever we talk about fall color, you say cool nights, clear days. We've had a bunch of that. Are we seeing the beginnings of setting the tone for our fall color right now?
We are, and the question's coming up, what is the dryness going to have? What impact is that going to have? And the best answer is wait and see. you really never know. Those purples and those real rich reds, though, do get produced on those very nice clear days and cool nights. And as we get closer, just like Nathan said, trees are, you know, the local weather has an impact, but that day length and temperatures and all that, you know, they're going to get ready when time allows them to get ready. But there's a lot of concern with the dryness. So on some species, they may kind of just have a faded color. But if we get towards the end of September, middle September, early October, and we have those really nice, cool, clear days, cool nights, we could still have a decent color, just depending on what all the weather kind of ends up. We may get some late rains too. Who knows?
So, well, and we have seen a few trees turning a little bit early because of the dryness, right?
And that's typical. I've heard the show many times. People call in, and if you really look around, a lot of those are in parking lots and apartment complexes and areas where there may be limited root zone. A lot of them are maples that prefer some good moisture and stuff. And if those are dry areas, you're gonna see that. On the news, they had one where half the tree turned red and the other half was green. So we have some very unique things happening. But usually early fall color is kind of an indication that that tree may be under some type of stress. So as the last caller mentioned, maybe some extra watering on trees like that could help this time of year.
All right, let's slip in another phone call here. Jerry is on the line. Hi, Jerry.
How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Hey, I live in a little town called Henlantown, north of Mason City, and this spring I have cherry, plum, pear, and apple trees. They all had blossoms, but then nothing's happened to it this fall, and I didn't know. A neighbor of mine said we had a late frost. Maybe you have ideas about what could be going on there.
Well, if they bloomed well and then you don't have any fruit, I would suspect there was a late frost or freeze. When they're blooming and it drops down to, let's say, 31, 30 degrees, that may destroy those flowers. And so they're not capable of producing fruit. So if you have something that blooms early, like an apricot or a peach or a plum, and then you have a late frost or freeze, that's always something which can destroy the crop.
Okay, so maybe next year it'll be better luck. I don't know.
Right.
That's the best thing to say with fruit trees, isn't it? There's always next year.
You can't insure a crop.
Just
you
like
can
the
hope,
baseball season.
But, right.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester, Nathan Brockman, entomologist and curator of the Christina Ryman Butterfly Wing at Ryman Gardens, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, all here to answer your questions. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we do have a hort gang here in the studio. Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester, is here. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Nathan Brockman, entomologist and curator of the Christina Ryman Butterfly Wing at Ryman Gardens. Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens. They are all here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Rich is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Question about butterflies, the viceroy butterfly?
Yep. The viceroy is the monarch mimic. What's your question?
Oh, did you mention it on the show? I guess I didn't hear.
Well, we've been talking about the painted lady because of their large number. There are viceroys out running around in the state, but is there a particular question about the viceroy short of its...
No, just that was all. Are they in decline? Are their numbers same?
So butterfly populations fluctuate on a regular basis. We run a program at Ryman Gardens called the Iowa Butterfly Survey Network, where we use citizen scientists to survey butterflies. Our viceroy numbers have come in pretty similar over the last handful of years that we've been surveying, which is about 8 years now. So they're where they are.
All right. And how do you tell the difference between a viceroy and a monarch?
So if you think of a monarch, you're thinking of an orange butterfly with black radiating veins radiating out away from the body. A viceroy is slightly smaller than a monarch. And a viceroy also has a black line that cuts across those veins that radiate away from the body. So if you see a line cutting across the other veins, it's a viceroy. It's one line on each of the hind wings.
All right. So you got to get pretty close.
You can tell from a distance if you know what you're looking for, but yeah, you got to be
okay,
fairly close.
You can tell from a distance.
Yeah, if you know what you're looking for.
All right. Let's go to Anne Marie in Iowa City. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about planting fall cover crop. Each year in the fall, I at the end of the gardening season, I till, and then I sow seeds of a cover crop, usually annual ryegrass.
That works well.
And sometimes I have a problem, particularly this spring, is that the I don't know if I sowed the seed too thick or what, but it kept my soil so wet that I couldn't till my garden up as early in the spring as I normally would. I had a patch where the seeds did not take root because I think I had a pile of leaves there that I pulled back, but wherever I planted the ryegrass, the soil was clumpy and wet, and where I did not have the ryegrass, it was all dried out and ready to plant. And I'm just wondering if you had any advice or observations on the fall cover crop keeping the soil extra wet in the spring when you're getting all antsy to get going.
Well, as far as getting the germination, all you basically need would be basically good seed-to-soil contact, so it shouldn't be buried too deeply. And then some moisture, and then typically if you have those two things, annual rye will typically germinate in just a few days. So it should germinate fairly well.
Yeah, it's fine in the fall. I'm talking about the following spring. It comes back. Like people say that after a frost, it's supposed to kill it, but my ryegrass has always come back in the spring and gotten all green and thick to the point where I actually have to mow it before I till it.
Okay.
And then it keeps the soil too moist.
Well, what you could maybe try is tilling it in late fall, like mid-November or so. Try it then so that you don't have to deal with that. So if you till it in the fall with the cold temperatures, that should kill it, so you don't have to deal with it in the spring.
Oh, so till it...
In late fall.
To get, yeah, all right. That's a good idea. And then, yeah, because when it...
Those two things, the tilling and the cold temperatures, that should kill the annual rye.
Okay, because I just always just left the seed in, and then it always grew back in the spring and kind of got in my way. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Anne-Marie. We're still getting comments about where to see painted lady butterflies. John called in. He said there's a ton of them at Neil Smith Wildlife Refuge. We got a couple of other comments that, here it is. We had someone write in to say that they love our sedum plants, and mm-hmm. somebody else says, my painted ladies are all over my mint plant flowers that I let go. So they're everywhere.
I was in Benton County yesterday, and anything yellow, they were just everywhere.
Really?
Yeah, around Shellsburg, Vinton, that area, there were a lot of them out yesterday. Anything yellow, I saw them.
To All give right. a feel of just how many are out there and how much more it is than normal, we do annual surveys weekly at Ryman Gardens for butterflies. And I looked at last year's number, and last year, 1 week we saw 12, 1 week we saw 21. Well, when we did our survey this week, we saw 747 individuals on the garden's ground. And that's not counting everybody. That's just counting where our survey path walks. So there's
wow.
even more than that on the ground. But 747. It's really something worthwhile for people to get out and see, because it is really something that doesn't happen very often. The last time we had numbers that were roughly this high, I would say it was 13 to 15 years ago.
Wow. So walk outside and go
that's
find
right. go outside.
A flowering plant and you'll find them.
That's right.
All right. Here's a question from Martha in Clear Lake. Hi, Martha.
Hello. My question is, I have a Victoria, I believe it's called a Victoria fern. The fronds grow vertically. Can I put that in the ground now, and will it overwinter?
I think if we're talking about the same plant, that's a close relative to the Boston fern, and it will not overwinter. But you can bring
okay.
it in as a house plant.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah,
thanks a lot for your call, Martha. Next up, we've got Jill in Des Moines. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Hello. Okay, I have three blueberry bushes that I got on sale midsummer, maybe at Hy-Vee. They're three different kinds. And anyway,
okay.
they are stuck. I stuck them near a tall wooden fence and intended to move two of them out further from the fence. And I'm wondering if it's too late, because also I'm wondering if the heat reflecting off the fence could be a problem, because they are blueberries, which I'm thinking are maybe more of a cool, loving bush
well,
than
they,
some other.
Yeah. They can take the heat. Are they still in the pots?
No, they're okay. probably quite rooted in, actually. I put them in sort of hill mounds, and I can actually bring the earth up to the level, you know, I need to around them if I'm not going to move them further out. But two of them are only maybe 3 feet at the most from the fence. And so, and when they bush out, they'll only be 2 feet maybe, or even less. So
okay.
I just thought, well, shoot, maybe the heat reflecting off the fence.
I wouldn't worry about that. What type are
okay.
they? Do you know what type they are as far as varieties? Are they high
okay.
bush blueberries?
I'm climbing around out here. Let's see, Northland.
Okay.
Northland blueberry, 36 to 48 inches
okay.
high and across. The other one, I think I've composted the tag away.
Okay. Well, they might be a little bit too close to the fence as far as size. Some of these get to be like 6 to 8 foot tall
okay.
and 6 to 8 foot wide. So they might be a little bit too close to the fence. If you decide to move them, I would do so next spring early before they begin to leaf out. They shouldn't have much of a root system yet, so they should be able to move fairly easily. But do it early in the spring before they begin to leaf out. And if you do so, they do need an acid soil. So when you replant, make sure you take some soil from the hole, about half the soil from the hole, and mix that with sphagnum peat moss, which you can buy at a garden center. Sphagnum peat moss is very, very acidic. So if you add the two together, half soil, half peat moss, you should have a nice acidic soil, and then backfill with that mix.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Jill. We've got a couple of tree questions, hopefully, to round out the hour here. Here's Chris in West Des Moines. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I have a purple plum off of my deck, and this year it got really bad with Japanese beetles. And it got so bad that we couldn't even be on that side of the deck, and then we eventually took the shop vac out and shop vac'd a lot of them off of the tree just to try and save some of the tree. But I've told my wife, I think this is it. We just need to get rid of the tree, and now I'd like to replace it. And it can't be something too big, you know, nothing larger than maybe 25 feet, and something that doesn't shed or attract Japanese beetles.
Okay. This is a tall order.
First thing I would throw in, Richard, is I don't know if I'd give up yet. As you've talked about many times on this show with Japanese beetle, just because it had heavy feeding this year doesn't mean that that tree's going to die.
It's typically not going to defoliation typically does not kill a tree. But you can't predict the population next year. The same thing could happen next year and the following year, or next year there could be just a very few. So there's no way to really predict that. So if they don't want to take that risk, maybe they do want to look at something different possibly.
Yeah, because we do get them back. I mean, they've been consistently coming on that tree every year. And some trees, or some years worse. This year is really bad. I mean, there wasn't a leaf left that wasn't defoliated.
This year was an especially bad year, especially bad. So I wouldn't judge it totally on this year. This was a really, really bad year for them. So,
all right. So what tree do you plant? I know they don't like my mulberry trees, but you probably don't want to plant a mulberry tree. What trees don't they like?
Well, they really like birch trees, linden trees. They like a lot of the rose family trees, like plums and prunes and some apples and crab apples. So you want to kind of stay away from those. As far as a small tree, possibly maybe a redbud. It's a small tree, about 20, 25 feet tall. They typically don't like. It's a nice ornamental tree, pinkish purple flowers in the spring. Kind of a nice yellow fall color, so possibly a redbud.
How about serviceberry, Richard?
That would be another possibility. They don't bother those too much. Again, a small tree, nice white flowers in the spring, some nice fall foliage.
Edible fruit?
Yes.
And more of an upright, they'll be either single stem or multi stem. And redbuds are kind of the same way, too.
Right.
Sometimes they'll be single stem or multi stem. And the redbud also, and you probably mentioned it, has a nice bark color in the winter, too, that gives you some more character if you're looking for characteristics throughout the growing season and even through the winter.
All right. I really like the shop vac method of control, though. That is the first time we've
heard
that.
Whatever it takes.
Chris, thank you so much for your call. And we are out of time today. But Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester, thank you so much.
Thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Richard Geron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, thank you.
You're welcome.
Nathan Brockman, entomologist and curator of the Christina Ryman Butterfly Wing of Ryman Gardens. Enjoy those painted ladies, and thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And Aaron Stile, assistant director of Ryman Gardens, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We will be back again with Horticulture Day next Friday, although we may not have quite as many experts on the air, but we will have just as much fun. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.